Hey folks, it is Sunday night, November 27th, Grey Cup Sunday, 2016. You're listening to episode 48 of the AIH Superfans Podcast. I'm one of your superfan pals. My name is Alan. On Twitter, you can find me at Slip with Five Eyes or Slip.
I'm Rudell. I'm Big Poppy Pig City. What up?
Hey guys, it's long time no see. It's Ryan, RB underscore 18.
Funny, you're back. What timing?
Well, I thought I'd time my comeback to a 5-game losing streak. So
we won today.
Oh yeah, they got the 42-24 being outshot all heaven.
As you can see, Arby's energy bar has replenished over the course of the last couple of weeks, and luckily for this next person, our special guest today, you get to take part in all the shenanigans. We have Zachary Devine on Twitter. You can find him at Zach the Bear, ZakkTheBear. He is writer for The Hockey Writer, Dauber Prospects, and Hockey Profits. And he has been a frequent guest on the AIH 20416 podcast. So, Zach, how are you doing?
Excellent. Thanks again for having me, guys. Look forward to the biopsy tonight.
And Zach is a San Jose Sharks fan, a team that's won playoff games. That must be nice.
Couple here and there.
We were just before we started recording, we were telling Zach updates on the Grey Cup, which Pappy, you said the Stamps are behind by 10 right now.
Yes, they just caught up and scored a touchdown at least before I went into my basement to get into podcast mode.
Well, where you live in the basement.
Yes.
So let's
as all bloggers should.
Of course.
Arby, you're in the basement too, right? Arby?
I am in the basement, actually.
Yeah.
Are you? It's lovely. All right, let's talk about today's game first, because we may as well start with something happier. The Jets won. For the first time in about a week and a half, they beat Nashville on the second half of a home-and-home. 3-0 was the score. 2 goals scored on empty nets at the end of the third period. And, yeah, it was a win, but, you know, there were issues. Arby, do you want to talk about the game?
Sure. What a nice treat it was to see Connor Hellebuck stop all 42.
He had a great game. He
did that should really quiet down the recall, the backup from the Moose, Mr. Andre Pavlik, for at least a couple days.
Are they seriously, do you really get serious comments on Pavi getting called up?
I don't see
very many serious ones, but I see some trolling tweets by, you know, the usual suspects about save percentage and whatnot, but I don't really see anybody really asking for Andre Pavlik to be called up. Maybe I've cleansed my timeline of those guys, but
who knows, maybe there are other trolls out there, but but no, I've seen some people screenshot some Facebook posts, and who knows? But no, the game today, it's a nice feeling for that dressing room, I bet, to finally win a game. But I don't think they were full of marks today. They got outshot 42-24 at 5-on-5. They were minus 15 Corsi 4. Hellebuck stood on his head, and he had to. 2 empty netters. Win's a win, so that's great. But I don't think it was really anything to write home about, but it did stop the bleeding.
Arby, do you want to... I was just going to ask, Ryan, do you want to tell the world who scored the first goal for the Jets and what you said right before on Twitter?
That was classic, by the way. That's
happened to me a couple times. I tweeted Drew Stafford, and I posted that picture from Office Space. Yeah, what is it you do here? And of course, 5 minutes later, he scored. So,
and everybody came over to you and made sure to point it out.
Yeah, a couple did, but that's okay. At $4.5 million, that's his first of the year. I don't think they have a huge leg to stand on either. So.
It was an exciting game. I know you sold off your tickets, and there was a picture of quite a few empty seats in that arena today. All sold, like tickets that were sold, but a little patches of emptiness there.
Yeah, well, those are seats that, you know, in the first 3.5-4 years, I'd say even up until last January, were sold on a regular basis, and sometimes, you know, at face value or 1.5 times face value. I know for the first 3 seasons, those seats were always taken up and always sold, but it's funny that a noon game on a Sunday and there were quite a few empty seats. Like, they're paid for, but, you know, like I said, those were seats that were always taken up, and, you know, at the bare minimum, we're given away, and I don't think, you know, a lot of people, I'd say thousands, well, at least hundreds of people turned down free tickets to today's game, but
there was a Black Friday sale. The Jets sent me an ad trying to sell off tickets for today's game and Tuesday's game for $50 a piece.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I thought it was 60.
What?
I thought it was 60.
Oh, maybe it was 60. Maybe it was 60. Maybe I get a better deal than you, Arby.
Yeah, maybe.
Chipman looks at that, and it's like, Ryan, we're going to put that to 60.
There you go. No, I think the media member that took that picture from the press box as the game started took another one a little bit later and said that they had filled in. It was an early start. People said the traffic downtown was bad because, I don't know, Black Friday weekend.
Sunday morning traffic in Winnipeg downtown? Really?
I don't know.
All right.
People said that it filled in, but yeah, I think on the heels of a 5-game losing streak, empty seats should be worrisome for the team, because the only thing worse than booing the team would be apathy, I suppose.
So let's talk about the 5-game losing streak. About a week, just over a week ago now, it was a Tuesday night. I was in Fredericton, and I was in a hotel with bad Wi-Fi. So I was trying to stream the game against the Blackhawks, and I couldn't. So I was using Twitter as my play-by-play. And it was just a big love fest for the Jets, the young players, the way the team had been playing. Everything is so great. Holy shit, this team. And then they get on the road, and people are predicting, you know, we'll go 4-1, we'll go 3-2. Lo and behold, 0-5. I think they were outscored something like 20-6.
Yep.
On the trip, mm-hmm. it was abysmal. So I didn't. I you know what? Honestly, because of other things going on, I don't think I saw any one of the games. I might have seen bits and pieces of them, but kind of had to take in information as the games were going without seeing them. And it doesn't sound like I missed much, and other than the Philadelphia game. Which they played well, apparently, but just, you know, couldn't get the win.
They control play against Philadelphia, and, you know, they were out goalied for sure. But then every other game after that, they pretty much were dominated in the neutral zone and couldn't generate any offense coming out of the back end, right? So their shots on goal were abysmal.
Well, it's 12 shots against Boston, right?
Yeah. I think
they had, what, 16 or 17 against Carolina? Nashville, I don't know. I mean, Nashville a couple of days ago. I mean, they lost 5-1. I don't know what the shots were, but when you lose 5-1, who gives a shit?
It was less than 20 again, I believe. Like, I don't know. Can somebody look that up? But I think it was below 20 shots again, so.
And of course, you know, despite the win, outshot very, very badly today. So what do we think is going wrong here? Zach, you said you saw the game. Did you have anything that you kind of can say from an outsider's perspective?
You know, I just keep looking at, you, like you said, those shot totals, and they're just getting railroaded out there. A lot of it, the scary part for me is you look at some of the shooting percentages for the Winnipeg Jets, and you go down the roster, and their shooting percentages, even the few shots they're getting, that's gonna correct. You know, Mark Scheifele is shooting 19.3. Adam Lowry, which I know you guys love, is at 15.6. Dano's at 18.8. Andrew Kopp is up there at 18.2. You know, those are going to come back to earth. And so when that dries up, when those hot sticks cool off a little bit and you're only getting, you know, 20 shots a game, it's going to get scary.
Well, their percentages are high because they're not getting any shots off, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But it's gonna come back to earth. You know, that's gonna go back to the, you know, it's gonna regress. Even Patrick Laine, his has dropped quite a bit. He's down to 20%.
Yeah, down to 20. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
I know. Yeah, well, sorry to budge in there, but I mean, I tweeted it and got yelled at, but I was like, you know, Scheifele and Laine, when they were, you know, one was leading the league in points and the other was leading the league in goals, they both were shooting 25%.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, and then I think Lawless or someone, you know, sang a song on TSN for his shooting percentage is that high because of his shot. I'm like, no, his shooting percentage is that high because pucks are going in and regression is around the corner.
Well, my biggest problem is they're top of the scoring lead and top of the goal scoring lead, and then a game and a half later, Paul Maurice splits them up and puts Laine on the third line with Kopp and Lowry. Like,
right. Like, that makes no sense.
It makes no sense whatsoever. His usage is totally... Like, how he's placing these guys is totally inept. Like, we were okay. We were doing okay when we had two decent lines. Instead, he decides to stack that first line again with Wheeler and Ehlers and then Barry Laine on third line. And it's just, it's counterintuitive to me. Like, he knee-jerks after that Boston game and I guess blew it all up. And how do these young guys have any type of continuity, or how do these guys... you know, have any chemistry or work on any chemistry if he's constantly moving them up and down? And then today he had Scheifele, Ehlers, and Laine on the line together again in the second period. It's just, I don't know. It reeks of desperation and lack of confidence in what you're doing, right? So how does that translate to the forward core moving forward?
I tweeted it out this morning. Have you seen the numbers for Scheifele and Ehlers with and without Laine?
Like, no.
The underlying number. It's like Scheifele and Ehlers are both like 56 without them and 45 with them. Like, Laine's dragging some players down, but when you have 12 goals, that's all you talk about. But now that they've dried up, I guess they need to find a place for him because he's dragging down the good players in the top six, so maybe that's why he was dropped down. I mean... Maybe they just need to drop him down to the third line and put him out in the first power play unit, because at 5-on-5, he's getting crushed.
So we had quite a few questions coming about up about Paul Maurice. So, I mean, we should probably start with the fact that we're still not working with some of our regulars, right? We have Perreault and Little still hurt. And there's also, like, Armia. Who else is hurt? Up front.
Matthias.
So, yeah. I mean, mainly it's Perreault. It's mainly Perreault and Little, and to a lesser extent, Armia that are still out. But in the meantime... Myers on the back end, right?
I guess.
So, Maurice has done a few things. He's juggled these lines around quite a bit. They still have Kyle Connor up. He came back from an injury and played 3 minutes today. So they have him up there doing nothing. And, you know, in the last game in Nashville, he benched the Scheifele and Wheeler line. Is Paul Maurice sweating a little bit right now?
I don't know. Like, I mean, he called up Chase DeLeo and he sat in the press box for 5 games and, you know, Chris Thorburn played every game. You know, I got a minor penalty almost every game that he was in for the 6 minutes that he plays. But... Well, that perplexes me too. If you're lacking offense and you keep Thorburn in the lineup and keep DeLeo in the press box, but I mean, you think if you're going to call a guy up, especially a young guy like DeLeo, and take him away from valuable playing time with the Moose, you'd think you'd get him in at least one game, especially when they had 3 and 4 nights and he didn't even get a sniff. Like, I don't know. I question how he's using them, and I question his loyalty to, again, Thorburn and Stewart. And you know what? Even the fact that, you know, Enstrom gets hurt, and then Stewart's on the first unit PK again. Like, it's perplexing to me. But.
Yeah, and it's a different game today if that double minor Stewart takes gets cashed in.
Well, absolutely.
Thank goodness for Hellebuck, but that third period was tough to watch if you're a Jets fan.
And you know what? And you know, it's not like we have Scotty Bowman here, or even like even an Alain Vigneault at this point. Like, I did a quick scan today, and Paul Maurice has the second lowest winning percentage out of all the active coaches in the NHL right now at 506. The only one below him in winning percentage is what's his face? Bill Peters in Carolina.
Carolina.
Yeah. But yeah, that's amazing to me. And you know, everybody thought he was a savior coming in, but in all honesty, he's not an elite coach. He's never been an elite coach.
Well, I mean, is he? You know, is he just a placeholder then?
No. Well, they gave him a contract, right? I don't know. Really, what does he bring to the table? Like, you look at his track record. He was ultimately loyal to Andre Pavlik for up until the beginning of this year. His usage has always been questionable. It's questionable now, and you look at his deployment. Especially on special teams, and the lack of vision and foresight on his special teams in general. Like, our power play has been shit since we got the Jets back, and it's been shit since Paul Maurice has been in charge. Right, so you can only blame Pascal Vincent or Jamie Compan so much, right? When the shit stinks, it stinks from the head down, right? So, I don't know.
I'm just taking.
What do you guys think?
I'm trying to find the stats on their power play. So bear with me for a second. I'll bring them up again. But
While you're looking there, I mean, speaking of their power play, there's this picture that I have that I took from last year, and I'll tweet it out later because it's my favorite. It's my favorite description visually of how easy it is to defend. To defend the Jets' power play. It shows Bufflin teeing up a one-timer, and it has all four of the opposition in line with the goalie. You can't even see any netting. I'll tweet it out later, and maybe the account can retweet it, but they've been doing that for years, and they have all this talent, but how many goals have they actually scored, like tic-tac-toe, cross-seam passes? Like, a handful over the past couple of years, maybe? And for all of the hands that are out there, like, there's some talented players with good hands out there, yet they're not nifty. Like, it's just pass it around the perimeter, load up Bufflin, rinse and repeat. Has been for going on 6 years now.
Well, right. I was commenting the other night, like, when was the last time you saw Laine on a one-timer on the power play? And, you know, Ovechkin's been in the league for how many years, and he still seems to get open, and he still seems to get that pass on a half wall, and still seems to get that one-timer off on a power play. And everybody knows it's coming. You know, it just, we don't have the guys to execute that. We don't have the guys to move the puck and get it to Laine on that half wall.
It may not even be the plan yet. Like, that, you know, for the lack the lack of execution that they're doing, you don't even know if that's the game plan on the power play.
No,
you know, it's, you know, sometimes, you know, they load up Buff for a while. It was put Lowry out there so he can stand in front of the net.
Like, it was nice seeing Trouba and Morrissey on the power play there a little bit. Like, there's a little bit of chemistry. There's a little bit more. It was a little bit more dynamic with them out on the power play today. But, you know, maybe a Nick Pétain on the first unit would be somewhat good. But they have him on the first unit, and they've got him in the slot. Like, how is that effective? How do you leave Nick Pétain in the slot when he should be on the right wall, kind of controlling play and quarterbacking from that end instead of being in front of the net? How do you put Nick Pétain in the slot when you need him to move the puck and pass? But I don't know.
That's a big thing. That's my observation. And that's the big thing with power plays, right? You know, you always hear the crazy fans yelling "shoot" when the puck's behind the net, but you've got to get some movement there. And when you've got a shot like Patrick Laine, not focusing puck movement as part of, you know, the major focal point of your power play, that's just going to hurt you. And I looked it up. The last 3 years, Winnipeg Jets are 29th in the NHL with a 15.9% power play percentage. And only the Ottawa Senators are worse.
And they're worse than that right now. They're at 14.6 for the season, which puts them at 22nd in the league this year.
Right.
So they haven't and you keep rolling out the same guys. Like, I mean, Blake Wheeler on the power play may not be your most creative guy, right? Like, it's just perplexing. I don't know.
Well, I wanted to ask Zach, as a Sharks fan, I mean, Brent Burns is probably as close to a Bufflin clone as there is in the league. And I realize you have Thornton and Marlowe and Couture and Pavelski, and you got some real talent out there, but is Burns can't be the focus of their power play, but he always gets that little wrist shot through, right? Like, he's not constantly taking one-timers, is he?
You know, it's funny you say that, because I would say that, yes, he is, in fact, the focal point. But the fun part about that is you focus in on Brett Burns up there at the point. He's got that ability to come in low. You know, he's a defenseman just because you have to put something next to his name. I mean, he's truly a rover, you know, if you look at how he plays the game. And if you – great. So you put two up high to try to block Burns from activating from up top, and what that leaves you is Joe Thornton on the half boards with probably the best player in the NHL at tipping pucks on net, and Joe Pavelski up front. And so it's the movement of that power play is what really helps it. And Sharks fans were going nuts for a week or two when that first power play unit was really struggling, and they just got back to basics of whipping that puck around and getting somebody a look. And it can't just be going back to Burns and bombing shots. And that what it is.
And that's the thing is Buff lacks that finesse and creativity from the point. Like, I mean, he's not that great a passer from up there. And we
Dynamic player. You know, there's no doubt. I mean, I like Big Buff. You know, I've liked him for years, but you know, Brett Burns is just it's another level of offensive creativity, and that is what I think is lacking from the Jets' power play is just true offensive creativity.
And I think a good shot towards the net and hitting the net is a big thing too. Like, his shots very seldom we get to the goalie, right? And how many times does it go off a leg in the corner or whatever it is? Like, we never get really many, many big looks, and when people know he's gonna unload from the point with a slapper, like, how hard is that to defend?
Right, and that gets back to the movement, right? You know, if you've got a defenseman that can, you know, back up, get the lane open up, let a screen develop, that's going to help. If you're just literally, you know, loading a cannon from up there, you're right. It's, you know, you can get some crazy nut to block anything. Mm-hmm. But without puck movement, I really, especially in today's NHL, you know, the players are just getting so quick, and you look at who's getting deployed on PKs now, and it's not the grinders. It's the quicker players. It's more skilled players, guys that can see plays develop, and you're seeing it across the league, you know, with the skilled third and fourth lines being developed. And so it's only going to get harder.
Seeing as we brought them both up, by the way, Burns just signed, right? 8 years at $8 million?
That's correct. 8 years, $64 million. He's got it's a creative contract. He's got big signing bonuses, and he's got lockout protection. That what is that, 2020-21? Where his signing bonus is $6 million and his salary is only $2 million. So it ticks all the boxes. It checked out, you know, when it got sent to NHL headquarters. It's one of the more creative contracts that I've seen Doug Wilson sign players to. He's mostly been against anything longer than 5 years. Pavelski and Couture's matching 5-year, $30 million contracts were kind of the litmus test of that. But with Brent Burns, he was going to get paid. You know, somebody was going to throw just everything at him, and the Sharks could offer that extra year. So I think overall it's a decent contract. I think the last couple years might be a little rough. But you look at who the Sharks have, you know, their window is the next 2 years, maybe three if you're lucky. Thornton's going to re-sign. Marlowe is a 50-50 at this point. But, you know, Couture's 26, 27. Pavelski's 32, so he's still got tread. The defense is relatively young, so I think it's a good deal.
Someone, I think, I don't know who it was, but I saw one tweet out there, which is what made me aware that he had signed, which was that they were saying that his contract makes the Buff contract look even better. And I was like, I don't know.
I saw a couple bootlickers tweet that here.
And, yeah, that might be a stretch.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to think. I mean, 8 years is a long time, and I love Brent Burns. I have him on one of my keeper fantasy teams, and he's one of my biggest producers. You know, 8 years at that kind of money, and he's 31. He's the same age as Buff, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, signing him till he's 39. No move though, right? There's a bit of no trade protection, but they can move it if they need to.
Right. He has a limited no trade clause that he can. The report is that he can list either 8 or 10 teams that he won't take a trade to. So that still leaves you.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a tweet, and you never know, you know, if it's crap or not. But somebody said it. It's Canadian protection that he won't go to Canada. And you look at that contract, you look at the money involved from a tax standpoint. You know, you start to laugh, and then you think about it, and you're like, wait a minute. Because that's a lot of money to give up. You know, unless he's going to Arizona, Dallas, or Florida. You know, where that contract actually makes more money. It, you know, maybe, who knows.
Anything else on Jet stuff that we want to talk about before we get into prospect stuff?
Yeah, just real brief. We were talking about the Jets power play and how easy it is to defend because they seem to know where the puck is going. It's Buff, rinse, repeat. My concern for the Jets, especially after, you know, Boston just put up a wall, and Boston's okay, but they're not the big bad Bruins they used to be. You know, how do you only get 12 shots? And then another team did it again. It was a Carolina that shut them down. Are they getting easy to defend? Like, Poppy, you mentioned it earlier about how they're getting beat up in the neutral zone. Like, they're such a perimeter team right now from the small glimpses I've seen. Because, you know, anything I watch, it's on mute. But we can get to that later too. I have a couple things to say, but I don't know. Like, are they just that easy to defend? Like, are they that injured that they just can't do anything in the middle of the ice?
Well, other than Nikolai Ehlers, who can really effectively gain the zone?
Right.
You know what I mean. Who can effectively gain the zone on this team? Like, even it frustrates me beyond belief. Where even Buff, he gets to the line and he's got a lane to skate it up the wall, and he'll just rifle it in there. And it's just, I don't know. And you know what? They left Boston with Paul Maurice kind of lamenting that we tried to carry in too much. And I just think it's just they lack that creativity to bust through, because we have enough skilled guys with speed that can gain the zone, right? And it's that first pass out of the zone and gaining entry that, you know, it's just forever dump and chase, and you really don't get anywhere. Like, they, you know, to gain possession just to dump it in every time is just ludicrous. And you see some of the guys trying to gain the zone, and, you know, possession's so key, and it's just frustrating to see that happen all game. You know, Blake Wheeler, chip and chase, but, you know, It's funny, you watch the teams that are contenders, and it just isn't that narrow a focus, right? I don't know. That's just my frustration watching this team and how this offense rolls. Because, you know, when they're in the cycle, they're not bad, but they just can't seem to get anything on the net. Even today in the first period, like, how many shots went wide or over the net or whatever it was? They just can't seem to get anything effective towards the net for anybody to tip or handle, right?
Even so, a missed net is a Corsi, and they're for everything that as bad as the Jets have been results wise over the past couple of years, they were at least trending positively.
Right.
But they're kind of a black hole this year right now.
Yeah.
Like, when you have your coach saying, like, you know, lamenting, you know, zone entries, carrying the puck, that to me says that it's not so much the players, it's the system. Well, I just can't imagine, you know, Peter DeBoer or Todd McClellan or some of these other coaches. I read a stat that Connor McDavid's line went an entire game with zero dump-ins. They carried it in every single shift. You know, that's what is winning hockey games. And if you've got a coach, you know, wishing your team would just throw it in a corner, you know, these guys, they want to get ice time. They're professionals. They're paid to play the system that the coach puts in place. And if you've got somebody that's trying to play, you know, 1990s hockey, what do you do?
Well, you know what? How many times do we carry it in, guys? Like Ryan, like how many times do we gain the zone with possession instead of dumping it in?
Like, I don't know. Not very much. I'd have to look it up, but like, just to give some you know, some numbers to what we're talking about, the Jets were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. They were 20th in the league with a 48.95 Corsi 4 percentage at 5-on-5, and they were 40% today. So that number is going to go way down. So they're not treading water, and they're trending in the wrong direction because, right. I don't know.
I mean, like today, that first goal that Stafford scored was all Jacob Trouba, and he having possession, gaining entry into the zone and getting a clean shot on net, and Stafford getting the rebound and just creating off of that type of thing. And you just don't do it. Like, I don't know. We gain possession and lose it right away. It's frustrating to watch. It's frustrating to watch, especially with the speed and skill that we have right now with the young guys coming up. And then that was a sentiment after that Boston game that Maurice was frustrated and wanted to get simpler and wanted to get back to dumping and chasing and hard straight lines and not trying to carry it in every time. And then I just shook my head when I heard that. Like, how do you do that? Like, you knee jerk react to one game when they've been, you know, progressively doing okay offensively, right? And then all of a sudden you just hit a wall. It's just, I don't know. It's frustrating as a fan to watch that. It is,
because the two players that this team covets or trusts the most, apparently, are Stewart and Thorburn, and all they can do is chip it off the glass and chip it into the zone. All they can do.
All right, well, let's stay ahead of the curve here, because I think officially, if this keeps going, people are truly going to look to the future again.
To lead into that, after this 5-game losing streak, you know, the media went back to you. Well, what did you really expect? This was a youth year, but 10 days ago there were statement games and the plan was working. So I don't know what's going on here, but apparently we're okay with youth. So we are looking for a draft pick. So go.
All right, let's talk about some of the people who are in the Jets system right now first. And we will not talk about young Jets or young Moose players. We'll talk about people who aren't currently playing in Winnipeg and see how they're doing. And, Zach, that's what we have you here for. Who should we start with? Who are we all most curious to hear about? Anyone?
I like to know how tall hockey players are doing.
Yes, let's start there.
Oh boy, so let's see. There's probably one that a lot of people are still interested in Logan Stanley. And, you know, the Jets traded up to get him, somewhat inexplicably. And you look at what he's doing. I mean, he's having a good year for Windsor, but Windsor is so loaded. I mean, I might be able to have a pretty darn good year on their blue line back there. And I continue to not see much creativity. I understand, you know, that he's got 9 points. And, you know, for Logan Stanley, that might constitute a breakout season through 18 games. But there's just not a lot there. He's a defensive defenseman that I'm just not sure that there's really a place for him in today's NHL. His zone exits are okay at best, and you know, he's huge. He dominates play at this level. And what happens when he, you know, 6'7" is big. You know, there's no getting around that. He's always going to be one of the bigger players on the ice. But what happens when, you know, the average forward coming at you is 6'2" and not, you know, 5'11" or 6 foot, and they're pros with speed. And I just that whole selection just continues to baffle me, outside of the fact that he's left-handed.
Just so that you all know, I saw Logan Stanley live on last Thursday in Peterborough when Windsor played the Peets. He was the first star of the game with 2 assists. So
yeah, you tweeted that out
in all your faces. I've seen Windsor so far 3 times this year, which is fortunate because I don't think they actually come up this way that often. But they, I mean, they have a hell of a team. They stacked up for the Memorial Cup, and Logan Stanley, he hasn't done anything really noticeable either way. You know, he's relatively responsible. He's not at all an offensive, like, there's no offense to his game. He doesn't have a cannon. You know, he often, you know, can move the puck out of his zone. A lot of times he kind of just chips it or dumps it out. You know, that first pass, you don't see it all that often. But he doesn't make mistakes, which is good, right?
Yeah, that's good. If he doesn't stick out for bad defensive play, then I guess that's okay.
Yeah, right. As a number one draft pick in the OHL, you really shouldn't stick out in that way.
and so, that's the concern, you know, because playing at the OHL level, that's drastically different from even the AHL level. And then what happens when you get to the NHL level? And so you got to, it's contextual. And so if he's not looking impressive as a physical specimen of that size, that's now D+1, that's a red flag. That's not normal. You look at what some of these players do in their 19-year-old year, and they're tearing leagues up. You know, they're not just saying, you know, he wasn't really good or bad. He just kind of, you know, played his game. And I understand you don't want to always notice defensemen, but a player of that size and that draft status, you need to be noticing.
Well, like, where does he play on that team? Because didn't Sergachev come down and play? He plays ahead of him. Yes,
they were playing. They were playing together briefly, but now they're. I think right now he's playing ahead of Sergachev.
Oh,
so he's on the first pairing.
I might be wrong. You know what? I'm not sure what the pairings are. I know he's not with Sergachev anymore.
Okay, and didn't they bring in that Rangers prospect that fell?
Yeah, Sean Day.
Yeah, Sean Day. So, yeah, like, he's right. Left-handed. So I'm just wondering what they're doing with all these left-handed defensemen and what the order is. I honestly don't know.
Well, their top-scoring defenseman is Jalen Chatfield, who, ironically enough, along with Tyler Norther, was at the San Jose rookie camp and development camp. And both those players were right-handed shots. And those are guys that they're familiar. They've been with the Spitfires. Norther was traded last year from London over to Windsor. And when I talked to him when he was out here in San Jose, he mentioned the Memorial Cup every other sentence. So he's absolutely geeked to be out there. You know, Sean Day, he's a player that if he ever wakes up and decides that he likes to play hockey, he can be a difference maker. He just hasn't woken up both literally and figuratively like that. But Chatfield's their top scoring defenseman. He's sitting there at 4 goals, 9 assists. And he's offensively creative. Defensively, he's a bit of a wild card. But they're loaded. They're going to get ready for a really big run. And so I think that will benefit Stanley's development, just to play that much hockey and that much meaningful hockey. It's just a matter of what if he's going to be able to utilize that to actually progress further.
Just to whet your appetites even more for him, guess which one stat he does lead the team in right now?
Penalty minutes.
Please be block shots.
Penalty minutes. Yay!
Does he lead his team in ill-advised neutral zone hits, exposing his defensive partner to odd man rush.
I haven't seen him enough. I haven't seen him in person do one.
Because that's the type of play we get from our third pairing defenseman usually. So, my question is, another guy that a lot of Jets fans are pinning their hopes on filling the depth chart is Tucker Pullman. What are your thoughts on him, Zach?
On Pullman, I haven't seen too much of him, to be honest, but I think a player that they do need to be aware of that's going to – it's probably still a few years away is Eric Foley. He's going to get a really long look for the United States. He was out at their National Junior Evaluation Camp playing for the Providence Friars, and he didn't look out of place. He was a big presence in front of the net, skates well north-south, has some issues with his lateral movement, but he's going to be a guy that I think is going to come in there and be a really complimentary middle six player.
There you go. See, we're all set. I just want to go back to Stanley very quickly for one more question.
Please do.
Yeah. Zach, maybe you can answer this both for at the time as well as now that we're, 6 months removed from the draft. Who would you have taken at 17?
You know, there's even if you wanted to go defense, there's just so much that was still there. Samuel Girard was a player that I thought really slid, and you look at what he's tearing up the queue now. He's an offensive defenseman. He's immensely creative defensively. He's improved. He's taken strides this year. It's not quite as glaring a hole, but he's just he looks to be a fine. And Cale Clegg, I actually was watching Brandon the other night, and he looks really, really good, and he's taken some steps forward, and that just kind of gets back to our initial gripes on Logan Stanley. As you look at some of these other defenders, that you look at their body of work from last year to what they've presented in their D plus one years, and it's just a huge step forward for some of them. Or at least a big step, a noticeable step. And if Logan Stanley is just kind of adding, bits and pieces, that's got to be a concern when you look at his peer group. It's just overall, even if you wanted to get in there and you traded up, Dante Fabro was taking the spot ahead of him, but that's who you really should have been jumping up to grab. You should have made sure you get into that spot as high as you can and take a player, at least, a magnitude level better than Logan Stanley easily.
Sam, or Arizona getting up for Chikrin too.
Yeah. Samuel Girard, by the way, 33 points in 20 games, leading the queue in defensive scoring. 30 of those are assists. 15 of his assists are on the power play. Logan Stanley plays the second unit sometimes in Windsor.
Yeah, Girard was my pick for them to snag when at their original spot pre-draft, but whatever. Yeah,
and even there at 17, it might have been a little bit high, but if you've got a player that you like and that fills organizational holes as well, you get out this, last year. When I think 19 was where I felt like there was, that's where another grouping started, if I remember right. So, jumping up, just a spot when you're right there at a tweener pick, that's not a big deal. And that's what the Jets should have done.
Should we be excited about Michael Spacek?
I think so.
He is currently... with the Red Deer Rebels, right? He's 33 points in 24 games, 14 goals, 19 assists.
There's pieces that the Jets have, and it's just a matter of waiting. It's a waiting game now. You've got some older players that are going to need to move out. You've started to see some of that. But even with these players, and we've you know, we've seen it in other teams that have rebuilt outside of the Shanna plan. The Shanna plan has gone about as perfect as anyone could have ever guessed. But these guys are all going to need, you know, some seasoning as they adjust. You know, the coming from the WHL, I think it better prepares some of these players for the rigors of the NHL and the AHL. But all these guys are going to need some time. So it's going to be another year or two before any of these, you know, reinforcements are really there. You know, Pullman, I don't watch a lot of NCAA hockey. If memory serves, he's a junior. He's an older player as well, so he might be able to step in a little bit quicker. But a lot of these players that are still in the CHL, you know, they're not top flight, you know, blue chippers. These are guys that are going to take some development, and that's really the takeaway, I think, for Jets fans. A lot of their top talent, it's already arrived. It's already getting acclimated.
So guys,
what's that, Arby?
So the 8-year plan.
Well, the thing is with Pullman too, isn't it this year that they need to sign him?
Yeah, he could be a free agent. He could be the next Jimmy Vesey this summer.
Yeah, because I if I remember correctly, he spent an extra year in the USHL.
I believe.
Before going to North Dakota, which is becoming, you know, a pretty normal thing these days. And so, you know, he's another, you know, big kid. He's, you know, he's what, 6'3", 6'4". He's a righty, though. He's another righty.
He's a righty. He plays the left side, though, and that's what people are kind of banking on here in Winnipeg. But,
you know, I personally hate that. I'm a big fan of handedness. San Jose Sharks have a good kid, Dylan DeMello, that got into his second game this last game last night. He's a righty, and he was playing with David Schlemko, who's been a revelation, and he's a lefty. And watching those two as the bottom pair, I mean, that they would be a 3-4 on a lot of other teams. And watching that, you know, just that ability, because both of them can play the opposite side. It's a good skill to have, but just being on your natural hand side, I feel like it's just a big benefit.
And do you know who also hated playing on their offense? Jacob Trouba.
Hey, they're the same age, right? Trouba and Pullman are the same age.
Are they?
Are they?
Or 22, 23.
Are we year apart? Yeesh. Yeah, they're pretty close.
Yeah. I was surprised Trouba signed, actually. You know, some of the venom that he and his agent were throwing out there about opportunity and things like that, I was actually a little surprised when he ultimately signed.
Well, he needed to play. He needed to play, right?
Yeah.
If anyone's interested in the Grey Cup game, Calgary just got within 3 and just recovered the onside
kick. Oh, my God.
Oh.
All right, then. Go Stamps, excitement. I guess. I like how Ottawa could win, a team that didn't exist, what, 3 years ago? And in Winnipeg, we're still waiting.
We're below 500, right, this year? They were below 500, yeah, right?
And we've been waiting for 26 years in Winnipeg. I want to ask, and this kind of ties into the Stanley pick. So the Jets, I believe they had 22 and 36. Those were the two picks. They moved those to Philadelphia to go up to 17. They got a third round pick coming back the other way. So we've talked about 90, what's that?
92 or 96 or something?
Something like that. Like way low. I think it was in the 70s.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Oh yeah.
It was a third. So it wasn't that bad, Ryan, please.
I was trying.
So they, we talked about some players that they may have been able to take around the 22 range. At 36, if we decided that 36 is the pick where you say, okay, I've got a free swing because of Liney, I haven't seen him play yet this season, but Alex DeBrincat, 23 goals, 23 assists, 46 points in 22 games. A lot of question marks, obviously. Chicago ended up picking him. Zach, I'm just curious because I'm probably going to see him play later this year. Do you think he's the real deal for an NHL team?
You know, I was down on DeBrincat overall because I think that there's just a lot of scary parts with being that small. But he just continues to produce at a frightening level. And so I've definitely warmed up on him. I think he's the real deal as far as an offensive talent. Will it translate to quite that level, you know, to a Johnny Gaudreau, which is kind of the measuring stick that we put against all these smaller players? I think he has a good shot at it. But with, you know, with where he was selected, you've got to really love that pick.
The other one I wanted to ask you about before we get into kind of undrafted players, and again, maybe this is just, you know, just something I've noticed and I'm not so wise to it yet, but got a couple of players, I believe, who are in the Tampa Bay system who are tearing up the OHL and the Q. I'm looking at, is Taylor Radish a Tampa Bay pick?
Oh, boy. That's a good question.
I could just click on his name here and maybe it will tell me. He is... It doesn't say, it's a secret. I believe he's a... yes, he is. He's a Tampa Bay pick. He was picked in the second round this year. He's leading the OHL in scoring right now with Erie. And then there's, I believe, Matthew Joseph and... Bakondi Imama? Are you familiar with any of these guys?
You know, I don't do too much on the East Coast. You know, Tyler Radish, obviously, out there... you know, with the Erie Otters, they're going to get back Dylan Strom, or he's already back.
Yes,
you know, that team turns absolutely frightening now with a NHL center that was ready. That gets really, really scary. You know, they're going to get ready to really run over, I think, the OHL, especially with a lot of the London Knights graduating.
It's Erie and London again this year right now.
Yeah, and it's going to be, but I think this might be Erie's year to get past them finally.
All right. Let's
What I want to know is who are the Jets looking at on Barry to draft? I'm just kidding.
The 8-15 Barry Colts right now.
But Dale Hawerchuk will recommend someone highly, so.
Of course he will. All right. Speaking of draft picks for this year, if you were to talk about, I think we all know about Nolan Patrick. We've spoken about him plenty so far. Just, you know, really basic stuff at this point. But who are we looking at in the top 10 right now for next year's draft, Zach?
So I think with this year's upcoming draft, it's going to get, well, right now it's very interesting. Because you have so many of the top players that are just very big question marks. Nolan Patrick has been, he had the hernia injury, and now he's out with a mystery injury that they're calling in weeks. You know, he's only played 6 games for the Wheat Kings. You have Gabe Vilardi out there in Windsor, who's injured as well now. You have Klim Kostin, the Russian. There was a report out today that he won't be at World Junior. His coach said that he lacked the explosiveness necessary on the smaller ice surface. And he's only played 8 games with Dynamo. And so you go down this list and you look at some of these top players and where they're supposed to be playing. Tim Liljegren just got over mono. He's over there in the SHL with Rugla, and he's only played a couple games. So you've got all this top-end talent that is really... You know, all those players, I think, are in just about everyone's top 10 right now. But they've just been so limited. You're going on body of work. You're not seeing what they're doing, you know, how they're progressing. So that's a little scary, especially, you know, a lot of guys, they'll get injured and they'll fall down draft rankings. And everyone's just leaving these guys in on, you know, some limited viewings, which, you know, their top talents, you know, so it's a little bit safer, but it's a little bit messy up there at the top. One player that I think that should be mentioned that is often forgotten is Nico Hersher, the Swiss player playing out there for the Halifax Mooseheads. He had another pair of goals today, 22 goals in 25 games. He's up to 45 points. Just really doing some heavy lifting out there. You know, he's playing with Max Fortier, who was amazingly not drafted last year. I still don't get that. But that's a player that, You know, he's a really skilled center that I think would slot in really nicely for the Jets. That I saw one list had him actually at number one due to a lot of the injury concerns. I think he's pretty solidly in the top 10, maybe top five. But that's a player that, depending on where the Jets finish, you know, if the season keeps trending downward, sorry, guys. Could be there. I mean, the bad news is this is not a superstar draft. There's not a Jack Eichel. There's not an Austin Matthews. There's certainly not a Connor McDavid. You know, this draft has some deep talent, especially on defense. But I just don't see that elite number one center, even in Nolan Patrick. You know, I think he's excellent. I think he could be, you know, a very good second liner, possibly a first liner, but I don't think it's a slam dunk.
There you go. Lots to look forward to.
Yeah, this is not the year to really go for the number one overall pick, I don't think. Even Tim Liljegren, you know, who is excellent, you know, right-handed defenseman out of Sweden. There's still a big curve with defensemen, and a lot can go wrong. I generally, outside of some really elite talents, shy away from that just personally. You know, I think he's in that top three for sure, just because of his, you know, his skating ability. He has really good vision. He's got a lot of excellent tools. Defense is just a little dicey, but he's a right-handed shot that will probably stay in Sweden for at least a year or two. So depending on where you're at with your defense, he might be the best player available, but might not be a fit with the organization. Eli Tolvanen is another small guy. He's a winger, Finnish winger, that's playing for Sioux City in the USHL, and he's just got a rocket of a shot. He's going to be another interesting player to see where everyone lands on him at the end of the day, because he's not big, but his offensive ability and shot might be some of the best in this draft.
So what you're saying is that everybody needs to put their tank memes away and their tank avies and anything to, you know, do with tank.
Yeah, I don't think this is quite the year to tank. And in fact, if you look at where, you know, the Jets are right now, I think 10th or 11th pick is where they'd end up picking. And then you've got to throw Vegas in. You know, they can't finish lower than 6th. There's some interesting defenders that are in that kind of double digit range. That's where you might see like a Nicholas Hag, a Cal Foote. Liljegren will be gone, but Miro Hiskinen, who's playing for HIFK out in Liga, that's a player that I've been able to catch a couple games on. I saw him out live as well, and he's an impressive young player. He's getting big minutes out in Liga, you know, top pairing minutes, and he does not look out of place whatsoever. Juicy Valimaki over there for Tri-City Americans. He's better than a point a game. Good size, good shot. So I think there's defensive help there in those middle ranges. So it's not the year to tank, but I think that there's definitely help available, especially on the blue line, that's going to be out there for teams.
Alrighty.
I'm still gonna post tank just.
You can't be stopped.
Can't stop, won't stop.
All right, let's go to Ask the Superfans. So if you want to ask questions for us or any of our guests, hit us up at AIH Superfans on Twitter using the hashtag Ask the Superfans, which a lot of people I don't think use today, but I'll try to get to the questions anyways. One we already answered from Jordan at WPG Feezy. Is Spasik going to be any good? And you answer that, Zach, I think.
I believe Zach said yes. So.
Yes. Yes.
There you go. And then there was a conversation about it that happened. Okay, let's see. There was a question, who's on the podcast tonight? If you've been listening, you have the answer. Is there anything else?
Yeah, there were some.
Hold on. Yeah. Here we go. It might be too early for this. This is Jimmy at Jimmy_Peg. It might be too early for this, but should the Jets re-sign Enstrom at the end of the year? He is a UFA after next season.
Ooh.
Oof. I love Toby, but it all depends on what the so-called plan is. I mean, if you're trying to win, then maybe, but if we're trying to develop, then no. But I don't know who's going to replace him on the left-hand side unless it's Morrissey. It's certainly not going to be Ben Chiarot.
Julian Melchiori? Or
God, no.
What do we have? Like, we don't have anything.
Logan Stanley.
At this,
You know who we don't have? Cale Clegg, Lucas Johansson, Samuel Gerrard.
You know what? They might. That wouldn't be their worst UFA signing. Put it that way. If we can give Mark Stewart a multi-year contract, when he came up to be a UFA, then why wouldn't we give Toby Enstrom a contract?
Yeah, that's fair. I love Toby. I think I would like him to stay, but I don't know. What would he ask for? I mean, he's not the offensive dynamo he once was, but he's so good in his own end. So maybe. I guess there's no one else in the pipe to replace him. So.
Jimmy_Peg asked also thoughts on Logan Stanley, so we answered that. Who's this guy? Brian from AIH asks, why does Paul Maurice insist on playing his elite prospects with Chris Thorburn?
So it's a bizarre rite of passage. It's almost like hazing.
Well, that's one thing. He likes to make guys earn their keep, right? Like, I mean, to be honest, like, there's always talk of paying your dues, and I guess what due is worse than having to play with Chris Thorburn, right? Like, I mean,
paying your dues is one thing; having to play with a boat anchor is another.
Yep.
This is an interesting one. Number one, Nick Antropov fan at Hockey League 72. Why is Michael Frolik on the Flames? I could have sworn he was on the Jets.
Oh, Peter.
We're just rubbing it in, guys. Come on.
Yeah. I don't even care. I've been told that I harp too much on the past, although I do say that the only way to learn from your mistakes is to look at your past, and I'm not sure they are learning from their past mistakes. But.
Yeah, I got into a little bit of a debate with one of the members of the MSM, the mainstream media here, this week about asset management and my distaste for how Chevy has handled, you know, expiring UFAs and whatnot. And the sentiment I got was, how do we know that he wasn't trying? Like, how do we know? What do we know about all the negotiations or the things that he's pitched to other GMs? But
yeah, so always give him the benefit of the doubt, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I pointed out Ron Hainsey, for example, who, you know, apparently wasn't worth anything at the deadline, but signed for over $2 million a year with Carolina. But apparently, you know, watching him play against the Jets the other day and being reminded that we signed Mark Stewart to a multi-year contract instead of him, it's kind of burns me a little bit, but whatever. Could you imagine 4 years ago lamenting the fact that we don't have Ron Hainsey anymore? Like,
yeah.
That's crazy stuff.
Reese.
And there's some players out there that, you know, you look at that are available in kind of that middle tier. And last year there was some, you know, pretty good defenders that were relatively young that were dirt cheap. And Nashville picked up a good one that the Sharks had in Matt Irwin, who never really got a good shake here or in his year in Boston. You know, there's players that are out there. So even if, you know, the negotiations on some of these key players or key free agents aren't there, you've got to get that middle tier. You've got to get the players that are going to help.
We signed our guy. We signed Brian Strait, you know?
Yeah. Well, and Zach, you mentioned earlier about David Schlemko. He was an under the radar signing that we were clamoring for as that sort of middle tier. And what a great spot to have in your bottom pair. I mean, he's a player.
And by the way, Zach, you mentioned Nashville with that signing, but what the hell do they know about good defensemen in Nashville?
Not a damn thing. Not a damn thing, Alan. By the way, they also were the ones that drafted Girard, just to go completely full circle on a total lack of understanding of Nashville defensemen.
Why do you keep kicking dirt in my face?
Why are you trolling the Jets fans, Zach?
Jesus Christ. what did we ever do to you?
Nothing. I'm simply stating that we're building the case against Nashville and their silly defenseman drafting strategy and signing strategies.
Idiots.
Let's just all point and laugh. That's all.
Yeah.
All right. Reese Smilski, R. Smilski asks, Gerard Gallant, a possible Pomo replacement?
Yeah, he just got canned tonight. Have you seen the pictures on Twitter?
No.
They lost tonight, and he gave the post-game interview, and they fired him, and he left the rink with his bags and called a cab.
What?
Yeah,
are you serious?
There's a picture of him hopping in the cab and him standing there basically waiting for a cab to show up with his luggage. They didn't even drive him back to the airport.
Oh, wow. Lord is headed the wrong direction, by the way, in case anyone was wondering.
Whew. Yeah. They were my sleeper team last year. I don't know.
Well, I mean, they lost Huberdeau right away. They just got Bukes fed back. But you just know that all of the traditionalists are going to be. I think I saw that Simmons was retweeted into my timeline somehow. I thought I had him blocked. But he said something about how the computer didn't spit out the right numbers for Gallant or something. And it's like, well, I don't know, old school coach with a new way of thinking. It wasn't going to work.
I think that's it for the Ask the Superfans. I've done a couple of searches and can't find anything else. So there you go. Right? Right.
We had one from Brian.
About what? Him not being on the show?
How much better is it that he's not on the show?
I don't know. Zach's a pretty good guest.
Well, it's a step back. It's a step back with me, though. So.
As long as I'm here, the bar is always going to be really low. So, but we are. By the way, and Zach, you can be part of this group now. We are the Superfan Elite. So,
actually, I had one question that I wanted to ask Zach before we sign off. I mentioned it before we started recording. What are the odds that Luke Green will help us get over the Stanley pick, because he was the backup, or the 22 and 36 went for Stanley and Green. So what are the odds that Green can help if Stanley completely fails?
I look at Luke Green and you look at where as a third round pick, I think that was a solid pick. To be honest, I think he has more upside.
Yeah, I agree.
I like Luke Green, and there's that kind of gets back to what we were talking about with the defenseman, where it's a little bit of voodoo. You look for guys that have the tools that can develop, physically or round out the defensive game. But if they've got that ability, mobility is something you can't teach. You can't teach puck handling or vision. Some of those are just innate, and I think
you also can't teach size. Apparently,
you can't teach size, but it means less.
I know.
And you can't measure heart. And I'm sure that Logan Stanley at 6'7" has a very big heart. But Luke Green just checks a lot of those developmental boxes that you can develop into an NHLer.
So Green and Stanley versus, say, Lucas Johansson and Cale Clegg. Who would you take?
Well, I think you'd have to take Johansson and Clegg. But to be honest, I'd probably put Green ahead of Stanley right now.
Very good.
Wonderful.
So excellent third round pick. Not so much on the traded up for first rounder.
There you go.
That, the scary thing is he was evidently their guy.
That's the part that everyone should pause.
They aggressively went after their guy, and that's man. And the Luke Green falling to us is a silver lining, but I don't know.
You know what's interesting is they say that they were going after, you know, their guy, and I you know, these trades happen, and I can't remember if it happened before or after the Favreau pick. But you look at that grouping of defensemen that went in the middle. You had Chychrun, Favreau, inexplicably Stanley, and then you had Chalowski that went, Johansson at the bottom, and then you still had Girard that went way too late. And so if Stanley's your guy, it's like, what on how do you pass on everything else? Oh my god. Well,
they knee-jerked because they heard Detroit was going to take him, right? Isn't that what happened?
That was a rumor.
Detroit took Chalowski, and they're going to be thrilled with that kid. You know, he's at St. Cloud State. He needs to fill out physically, but he's going to be, you know, he was right there with Favreau as far as the best defender in the BCHL, I thought.
It was really funny because when they announced that trade, I was like, please, please let it be Logan Stanley so I could see Twitter just fucking go up in flames.
Yeah.
Well, and then
and it did.
Yeah, me and Phil were at the draft, and when the trade happened, we were looking at our phones going like, oh my god, like, this is magic. Then it happened, and then we were both so miserable that people didn't want to sit around us. Like, people, fans around us were like, are you guys okay? Because we were so miserable.
Your family sending a wellness check to the NHL draft.
All right, well, on that note, I guess we'll sign off for the show. So before we go through everybody who was on, thank our guest, Zach Devine from the Hockey Writer, Dauber Prospects, and Hockey Profits. And is Hockey Profits your site, Zach?
No, that's Brian Fogarty, who's does a lot of our It's all the fancy stuff. He's got his modeling and all that stuff. I just do some interviews and some writing and give everybody my hot take.
I dabble in some modeling as well.
Yeah, that's like the darkest of dark arts. We're getting ready. It's kind of the quiet season. We're getting our viewings in. We don't do too much with the early season stuff just because there's a lot of games. People are coming back in from the summer, so we're still compiling. Probably look for something around New Year's to have us jump into the list fun. And then all my San Jose prospect stuff can be found over at dauberprospects.com. And some write-ups on the Sharks and the Barracuda can be found at thehockeywriters.com.
And on Twitter, you're at ZAKKTHEBEAR, Zach the Bear.
That's correct. Or if you're in the States, ZAKKTHEBEAR.
Yeah, no one in the States listens to
us. We're talking the rest of the world here, buddy. It's Zed. Globally, it's Zed.
I know. It's
good luck with Trump, by the way.
Did you see that your president-elect today has come out and said that the results of the election that he won had a whole bunch of fraudulent voting?
You know,
it's rigged. I won. It's rigged.
I voted for Jay and Silent Bob, who I thought would have done a far better job than either of those two. So,
oh, that's you voted for a third party. Oh man, you're the one that blew it for everyone. Apparently,
you didn't.
You know what,
you
Alan? Don't start me with that. When next time I'm out there, I'll let you know when I'm out on an OHL kick, and I'll tell you what I think about that.
Sounds good.
You were supposed to vote for D's Nuts or Harambe, though. Harambe was the choice this year, wasn't it?
Harambe might have got so many votes, he might qualify for federal election assistance.
All right. So go to arcticicehockey.com for all your Winnipeg Jets news and notes. We are at AIH Superfans on Twitter, and we'll go around the horn one more time. Oh, by the way, follow us on iTunes. If you're listening to this, through a stream or something that we've posted on one of the sites to play it, that's embedded, go to iTunes and download the show, set it up. It's a lot easier, trust me. Anyways, my name is Alan on Twitter. You can find me at Slip with Five Eyes or Slip.
Yeah, I'm a big Poppy Pig City.
RB_18.
And we will try to see you all again in about a week or so. Thanks. Good night.